odd, I would, said Ford. Well, I suppose we have a different outlook. Yes, like the picker birds. Ford had no idea what he was talking about and couldn't be bothered to ask. Instead, he said, so how the hell do we get out of this place? Well, I think the simplest way from here is just to follow the way down the valley to the plains, probably take an hour, and then walk around from there. I don't think I could face going back up and over the way I came. Walk round where from there? Well, back to the village, I suppose. Arthur sighed a little forlornly. I don't want to go to any blasted village, snapped Ford. We've got to get out of here. Where? How? Said Arthur. I don't know. You tell me. You live here. There must be some way off this zarking planet. I don't know, said Arthur. What do you usually do? Sit around and wait for a passing spacecraft, I suppose. Oh, yes? And how many spacecraft have visited the zark-forsaken little flea pit recently? Well, a few years ago there was mine that crashed here by mistake, then there was a trillion, then the parcel delivery, and now you, and... Yes, but apart from the usual suspects... I think pretty much none, so far as I know. Pretty quiet around here. As if deliberately to prove him wrong, there was a long, low, distant roll of thunder. Ford leapt to his feet fretfully, and started pacing backwards and forwards in the feeble, painful light of the early dawn, which lay streaked across the sky as if someone had dragged a piece of liver across it. "You don't understand how important this is," he said. "What? You mean my daughter out there all alone in the galaxy? You think I don't—" "Can we feel sorry for the galaxy later?" said Ford. "This is very, very serious indeed. The guide has been taken over. It's been bought out." Arthur leapt up. "Oh, very serious," he shouted. "Please fill me in straight away on some corporate publishing politics. I can't tell you how much has been on my mind of late." "You don't understand," said Ford. "There's a whole new guide." "Oh," shouted Arthur again. Oh, I'm incoherent with excitement. I can hardly wait for it to come out to find out which are the most exciting spaceports to get bored hanging about in some globular cluster I've never heard of. Please can we rush to a store that's got it right this very instant?" Ford narrowed his eyes. "This is that thing you call sarcasm, isn't it?" "Do you know," bellowed Arthur, "I think it is. I really think it might just be a crazy little thing called sarcasm seeping in at the edges of my manner of speech. Ford, I have had a fucking bad night. Will you please try and take that into account while you consider what fascinating bits of badger-sputumly inconsequential trivia to assail me with next?"
"Try to rest," said Ford. "I need to think."
"Why do you need to think? Can't we just sit and go with our lips for a bit? Couldn't we just... dribble gently and loll a little bit to the left for a few minutes? I can't stand it, Ford. I can't stand all this thinking and trying to work things out anymore. You may think that I'm just standing here barking." It hadn't occurred to me, in fact. "But I mean it. What is the point? We assume that every time we do anything, we know what the consequences will be, i.e. more or less what we intend them to be. This is not only not always correct, it is wildly, crazily, stupidly, cross-eyed, blithering, insectly wrong."
"Which is exactly my point," said Ford.
"Thank you," said Arthur, sitting down again.
"What?"
"Temporal reverse engineering."
Arthur put his head in his hands and shook it gently from side to side. "Is there any humane way," he moaned, "in which I can prevent you from telling me what temporary reverse bloody what's-iting is?" "No," said Ford, "because your daughter is caught up in the middle of it, and it is deadly, deadly serious." Thunder rolled in the pause. "All right," said Arthur, "tell me."
"I leapt out of a high-rise office window," said Ford.
This cheered Arthur up.
"Oh," he said, "why don't you do it again?"
"I did."
Said Arthur, disappointed. "Obviously no good came of it." "The first time," said Ford, "I managed to save myself by the most astonishing, and, I say this in all modesty, fabulous piece of ingenious, quick-thinking agility, fancy footwork and self-sacrifice."
"What was the self-sacrifice?" said Arthur.
"I jettisoned half of a much-loved and, I think, irreplaceable pair of shoes."
"Why was that self-sacrifice?"
"Because they were mine," said Ford crossly.
"I think we have different value systems," said Arthur.
"Well, mine's better," said Ford.
"Well, that's according to your—" "Oh, never mind. So having saved yourself very cleverly once, you very sensibly went and jumped again. Please don't tell me why. Just tell me what happened, if you must."
"I fell straight into the open cockpit of a passing jet town car, whose pilot had just accidentally pushed the eject button when he meant only to change tracks on the stereo. Now, even I couldn't think that that was particularly clever of me."
"Oh, I don't know," said Arthur wearily. "I expect he probably sneaked into his jet car the previous night and set the pilot's least favourite track to play or something."